BBC Radio 4.
Thank you very much.
Exactly what I said.
And a big believer in home baking as a way to deal with stress and anxiety.
Anyone in the audience new to gardening since lockdown?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
This was much more up my alley.
So that's a comfort, isn't it?
This is BBC Radio 4. We've a
long... All this and more on Radio 4.
Well, now Steve Hunt and Hugh Dennis are on the hunt to find the next president of the US in a programme that was recorded this morning.
Hello, I'm Steve Punt.
And I'm Hugh Dennis.
With us are Sophie Duker, Jeff Norcott, Jenna Friedman, Jess Robinson, Gemma Arrowsmith and Luke Kempner. And this is...
The Now Show!
Four more years!
The unmistakable sound of America's lawyers celebrating the legal gold mine that lies ahead as Trump tries the equivalent of disputing the result of a football match because he'd been leading at half-time.
The most expensive US election in history turned out to be much closer than the polls were predicting. Again. What was accurate was the forecast that Trump would appear to be leading on the night but fall back as the postal votes were counted. Biden told his supporters to be patient. Trump told his that the election had been rigged through the criminal ruse of actually counting all the votes.
Trump's tactics in this election have at least proved that he is definitely not taking his orders from Vladimir Putin. Because if he was, his attempts at cheating would have been a bit more subtle.
We don't yet know if his supporters will take action to demand vote counts are stopped.
There is a possibility that the US could become the only country in the world where people are taking to the streets for less democracy.
But we've known for months that because of the pandemic, the postal vote would be much higher than normal.
And we've also known that these were more likely to be Democrat voters, as they are more likely to be avoiding crowds, unless the crowds have got banners and are outside a police station. And US voting stations are crowded.
A strange sight to British eyes are the hugely long lines to vote. The legal voting age in the US is 18, but in some districts, you'll need to start queuing when you're 16 and a half.
And when we say some districts, we mean black districts. But what lessons can be learned? TV pundits wasted no time in telling us.
Let's go to our Washington correspondent, Anthony Zercher. And Anthony, basically, we've entered the nightmarish scenario, haven't we?
Oh, don't say that. Don't use words like that. For me, nightmare scenario means something like the Russians have launched their missiles, we have 4 minutes to impact. Not two old men are squabbling over who gets to move house in January.
By the afternoon, Twitter had covered Trump's tweets in so many warnings they looked like a cigarette counter in a supermarket. The warning read,
"Some or all of the content shared in this tweet is disputed and might be misleading about an election or other civic process."
It's a bit late for that. Frankly, some or all of the content of the entire last 4 years might be misleading about any number of civic processes. We're kind of used to it now. As we record this, Trump is preparing to try and cling on to power through any means possible.
"Mr. President, it's over. It's time to leave the White House."
"I just signed an 18-month contract with Virgin Media. I got a very good deal. I got the best deal. And it included an $80 cancellation charge. Which, by the way, I negotiated down from $100, so it's very unfair, very, very unfair to expect me to move out. No president has ever been treated this badly."
Oh, comedy's going to miss him. Anyway, his legal fight against the basic function of a vote-based system will mean he doesn't yet have to decide which part of the country to retire to.
Although you suspect the choice is obvious. Orange County.
An American election, though, is a long-haul business in every sense.
For the last few days, each candidate careered across the country in what they called presidential campaigning, but which, given their respective ages, could equally well have been called the Antiques Roadshow. Both were keen to avoid saying anything that might endanger their chances.
"I can't believe I'm ahead in the polls because, well, let me tell you a little secret. I wasn't even born in America. Oh, darn."
It's actually true in Biden's case. His birth certificate shows he was born in Pangaea and drifted to the US through tectonic shift. But all absurd comic hyperbole about his age aside, Biden would be the oldest person ever to take office as president, a record currently held by Donald Trump, who's 4 years younger.
Both contenders also pulled out their heavyweight support. Various rappers came out in support of Trump.
Which does seem odd. You wouldn't think he had anything in common with some very rich men with trophy wives and a love of telling everyone how rich they are. Meanwhile, Obama came to campaign for Biden.
I'm here today to support my friend, to plead for a different America. But above all, I want to remind voters that there was a time when America was a nation whose president could speak in coherent sentences. I know that Joe Biden will uphold the U.S. Constitution because as a young man, he helped to write it.
No, he's 78. He's just not that old. We've got to find another humorous angle.
The age of the candidates in this election has had the effect of making me feel young, though, which elections generally don't do anymore, except possibly ones for a new pope.
Anyway, the two candidates struggled like two dinosaurs, like two titans in Greek myth. Biden dismantled Trump's complacency over COVID, and Trump claimed that Biden would put the country in lockdown while his family should be locked up.
The atmosphere at Trump's rallies, though, made that a slightly confusing proposition.
What do we want to do?
Lock him down!
No, lock him up. And what about my economic plans?
Lock him up!
No, don't lock it down. What should happen to the Biden family?
Don't lock him down or up, whichever is appropriate.
I'm cutting this short. Goodbye, Michigan.
Minnesota!
Whatever.
Both candidates tried to pin nicknames on each other's weaknesses. Trump does use a lot of dishonest tricks.
And that is why I call him the Hocus Pocus.
While Joe Biden does tend to lose his way.
And that is why I call him the lack of focus POTUS.
Trump has not just made a mockery of opponents, but all COVID protocols, except one. He's clearly been doing his own makeup, and very badly. Recently, he's been bright, bright orange with huge white rings around his eyes. From a distance, he looks like a fanatical panda that supports the Netherlands.
Elsewhere in the elections, Republicans held on to their majority in the Senate, while in a remarkable first, a man who is dead was elected to North Dakota's state legislature. He must have been given the same drugs Trump got.
This is apparently the first time a ghost has won a seat in a state assembly. Apparently he was an effective campaigner, though. He'd appear in voters' houses in the middle of the night and promised to bring back the true meaning of Christmas.
Elsewhere, Mark Kelly became the second US senator to have flown in space, becoming a Democrat representative for Arizona. When Trump finds out about this, he will probably change his mind about funding NASA.
This is Capcom. We are go for launch in 10, 9.
These are bad numbers.
8.
The numbers are going down. Not like my numbers. I had great numbers.
7.
This is no surprise to me.
6.
There's a Democrat on that rocket.
5.
They do not know how to count.
4.
Terrible numbers, really bad.
3.
Actually, it's a fake rocket.
2.
I could have been an astronaut, but I said no.
1.
The worst number.
Liftoff.
Trump Tower can do that. I built it myself.
It's been a bit of a confusing week in American politics for the uninitiated. Here to explain what on earth is going on is American stand-up comedian Jenna Friedman. Hey, Jenna, nice to have you on the show. How's it going over there?
Last I checked, Biden was leading the popular vote by 3.56 million. Or to put it in European measurements, that's the population of 10 Icelands and a Liechtenstein. But it's also somehow not enough to clinch the presidency, because in American democracy, and I'm using air quotes as I say democracy, if we didn't have the Electoral College, Al Gore would have been president in 2000, we would have never invaded Iraq, and I would probably be reporting to you from a carbon-neutral space station in a galaxy far away. But alas, here we are. And the only winner of the election thus far that I can tell is the 24-hour news cycle.
Why do you think so many Americans love Trump?
That's a good question. You could blame a whole host of factors. The proliferation of fake news on Facebook, YouTube algorithms that push people towards conspiracy theories to keep them online, 20 years of Fox News parroting Republican talking points and stoking racial resentment, flawed neoliberal economic policies that left so many working class folks without jobs, countless wars, beginning with Vietnam, that eroded our trust in government, or even The Apprentice, which enabled a bankrupt, washed-up celebrity to spin his image from trust fund baby who squandered millions in inherited wealth to competent business person, proto-monopoly man, who, through the power of television, was able to creep into millions of unassuming American homes and grab them by the hearts and mind and maybe some pussy.
What's going to happen if Trump contests the election all the way to the Supreme Court?
That is my real concern. With the confirmation of Amy, pro-life, unless that life needs health care, Coney Barrett, the Supreme Court now has a conservative majority of 6-3. Coney Barrett and two other justices, John Roberts and the recently appointed Brett Kavanaugh, all worked on the Bush v. Gore Supreme Court case, where Republicans basically stole the 2000 election. And I believe if given the opportunity, I have no doubt they will side in favor of Republicans once again.
So regardless of what happens, do you think that America will ever mend the divide?
At the moment, I am somewhat hopeful. America's been divided for a while. We've already had a civil war. But what gives me the most hope is our divorce rate. It's at 50%. And I think about that when I think about our blue and red divide. If Americans have been able to fight with their spouses to the point of divorcing and the kids still end up okay, I believe our nation will be able to follow suit. Worst case scenario, we'll all just have a lot more Christmas presents this year.
Jenna Friedman.
One of the topics that's coming up in many areas recently is the importance of media impartiality. Here to explain more is Sophie Duker.
Hello, all you cool cats and kittens, and happy second lockdown. Hope you're all staying positive and testing negative. I'm Sophie Duker, and I'm a comedian, but I wouldn't want you to think that the Now show having me on means the BBC are in any way biased in my favour. In the interest of impartiality, other comedians are available. I've been booked because I'm hilarious, but for balance, maybe I'm not. Some of you will titter at my jokes, mainly because the word titter has a tit in it, and you lot are ridiculously immature. But some of you will have a different reaction, becoming angry, agitated, or aroused by my set. Who's to say what I am, why we're here, or whether you should like it? Not I. Confused yet? I'm just trying to be impartial. Despite Trump's familiar battle cry of fake news, most global media outlets claim to be impartial. They boast objective, balanced reporting and plain, unseasoned coverage. I doubt a newsreader has ever opened with, "This next report is as biased as Billy O, so you hippie dissenters can suck it." And if it has happened, it was probably on Fox News. So horny are the media for impartiality, they're willing to tell their employees to keep shtum on hot political potatoes, even in what could be construed as their private personal lives. Just last month, a broadcaster who must not be named, spoiler, it's the BBC, issued social media guidance instructing staff to avoid virtue signalling, no matter how worthy the cause. Yep, that's right, staff were told to keep their virtue under wraps. I guess like bi-curious before it, virtuous has entered the category of things no self-respecting broadcaster should ever admit to being. Virtue signalling is now a dirty word. Or to be exact, a dirty verb. Dirtier than belching. Or squelching. Or voting Remain. Anyone and everyone can be accused of virtue signalling, from anti-Trump tweeters to actual angel Marcus Rashford, who tweeted sweetly last month. On a serious note though, what is virtue signalling? Oh, Marcus, don't worry your sweet little head about it. Stick to what you're good at, being a cracking football player and exposing our government as the grisly lineup of cold-hearted Dickensian villains they are. Like unmarried women in period dramas, media personalities aren't encouraged to share their personal political opinions, which is why so many outspoken journos have "these views are my own, not those of my employer" in their Twitter bio. It's the broadcasting equivalent of shrieking, "Yes, Queen, yes," and then grunting, "No homo." For as long as Joe Biden can remember, and that's not even that long, impartiality has been seen as desirable. But now that it's led to a media culture where flat earthers debate physicists and mad racists are pitted against minorities, you've got to wonder, is impartiality really all it's cracked up to be? Don't know if you've noticed, but we live in a world where the powerful ignore pandemics and parade their privilege on private islands, where existing in a subversive body can get you killed, where sweaty pizza-loving princes remain remarkably unarrested. What's there to be impartial about? Today, maintaining silence literally means endorsing violence. Jumping on the "only MPs should talk politics" and "amateur activism is bad" bandwagons not only dismisses individuals with empathy, it actively discourages others from doing good. Sure, you could shriek at everyone not actively employed by a charity to stay in their lane, but what does that make you? Sneering at a broadcaster for taking an ethical stance is one step away from saying David Attenborough should do one. That Malala really milked getting shot in the face. That rather than housing refugees, Gary Lineker should stick to his real talent, crisps. I know some of you want me to say football punditry, but we all know what he's best at. It's crisps. But I digress. Impartiality, is it all that? I just don't know. Well, I do know, but I'm out of time, and I can't conclude a set on impartiality by coming down on one side. I've been Sophie Jika. Or have I? Enjoy the apocalypse. I'm about to go break into a children's playground and sit slap bang in the middle of a seesaw. For balance.
Sophie Jika.
So, Lockdown 2 was announced last weekend, and the BBC have been helping the nation to get ready.
England is heading into a second lockdown. So today, on Call You and Yours, we want to hear how you're preparing for lockdown round two.
Ah, well, let me make the answer to that question perfectly clear. Taking all factors into account, we're not.
To help us remember the rules, the Prime Minister and his chief scientific and medical advisers took a Saturday night TV slot and unveiled their latest catchy slogan.
We're gonna lockdown two.
Avenue. And then we'll take it higher. Oh, we're gonna
lock down to
Electric Avenue. And then we'll take it higher.
He's going! Oh, he's fallen flat on his face! Oh dear, that's the end of another Matt Hancock press conference.
It's important to say that this won't be like the last lockdown. For a start, you don't need to panic by toilet paper unless all six of your children spent Halloween dressed as a mummy.
In fact, panic buying generally doesn't seem to be too much of an issue this time round. People presumably have stuff left over from their pre-lockdown panic buying in March.
Yes, or their pre-no-deal panic buying from the previous Brexit deadline.
Or from the Brexit deadline before that.
Or the one before that. Basically, British people have hoarded so many tins in the last 2 years that the magnetic North Pole has drifted southwards, towards somewhere around the Midlands.
Boris Johnson told us that Christmas is going to be different this year, which is certainly true. For a start, the Doctor Who Christmas special might be less scary because the Daleks can only appear on Zoom.
We are the masters of Earth.
What did he say?
Take yourself off mute!
Christmas will also be different because the police have been told to break up large gatherings, but also to remember it's the festive season and be sensitive about how it's done. If they spot a house with a big party going on, they'll bring in a loudhailer.
Attention, please. You are hereby warned. This gathering is illegal.
To which the partygoers will reply,
Oh, no, it isn't.
Oh, yes, it is.
And this will go on until December the 2nd, or whenever the R value drops well below 1, when the partygoers will say,
Where's the lockdown?
And the police will reply,
Behind you!
And everyone will carry on. Of course, we all knew a lockdown was coming the moment Boris Johnson said he would avoid one at all costs. It's not gone down well with many Tory backbenchers, though.
No, the disagreement and anger has reached a point where some have compared the Conservative Party at the moment to the Labour Party at the moment. When it comes to lockdown measures, the chair of the 1922 committee is known as one of the hawks, so-called because they like things that are airborne and require protective clothing.
Other people are opposed as well. In Liverpool, the owner of a soft play centre caused a brief stir on social media when they claimed that under Section 61 of the Magna Carta of 1215, they didn't have to shut. Historians quickly checked this and weren't convinced.
Section 60, in the matter of scutage, 2 groats shall be paid for the Lord's domain lands and 3 at weekends.
Section 61, soft play areas shall not be subject to the word of Parliament once it is invented in 50 years' time.
The 1215 version was annulled anyway, although there are plans to revive the payment of scutage post-Brexit.
Liverpool was also in the news this week because it's where a new COVID test is being trialled, alongside the already strict rule on Merseyside to stay at least 2 tickling sticks apart.
Also opposing lockdown, you'll not be surprised to hear, is Nigel Farage, who set up an anti-lockdown party, which has said it will stand candidates in the local elections next May on the platform of opposing the lockdown that happened the previous November.
Yes, they're also opposing the moon landing in 1969 and the papal annulment of the Magna Carta.
The new party will be modelled on the success of the Brexit Party and will push for a referendum on leaving the fight against COVID under their catchy slogan, Take back a total lack of control.
Like the Brexit Party, it's a single-issue organisation. Possibly the plan is to change the party's name regularly to whatever's annoying people at the time. Around the middle of this month, it'll be...
The We Don't Like the New John Lewis Advert Party.
By the end of Boxing Day, it'll be...
The No More Zoom Quizzes, Thank You Party.
January 2nd, it becomes the...
I Refuse to Start Jogging Party.
And by March, it'll be the Brexit was never going to be easy and we never said it would be party.
For the next month, though, we're all under lockdown again. Some critics say it's because, unlike some countries, Britain doesn't have a properly functioning track and trace system.
But be fair, as a government spokesman points out, half the time they can't even track or trace the Prime Minister. So 60 million citizens is a challenge.
But there is one man holding out against lockdown. Stand-up comedian Jeff Norcott.
Lockdown, like Brexit, Harry and Meghan or same-sex partners on Strictly, has created yet another binary line in British debate. It's the new thing everybody has to have a stance on. Unfortunately, unlike Brexit, we don't yet have neat names to describe our view. I mean, you could have...
Lockdownist!
Bit clunky. Or...
Remainer Openist!
Bit crap. Or my own position...
Well, sympathetic to the health concerns of Corona, also worried about destroying the economy for future generations, ist.
As with Brexit, I find myself in somewhat of a minority in my profession, as lockdown seems to be favoured by those on the liberal left. There are reasons lefties tend to love a bit of lockdown. On a superficial level, it's the caring choice. It involves heavy state intervention, and a card, let's be honest, are very efficient these days. If, like me, you veer on the lockdown sceptic side, you're portrayed as someone keen to let the virus rip through society and who wants Nana to die. It's interesting that throughout this pandemic, the death of grandma has been held up as the ultimate price we'll pay for doing nothing. Evidently, no one gives a toss about granddad, who is either already dead or had it coming because of some sexism he did in the 60s. I also simply want things to exist in the future that I benefited from, like nightclubs. Given the excessive regulation these days, who would open a nightclub now? Nightclubs will eventually become the stuff of myth and legend until, just like Shakespeare's Globe Theatre, some wealthy enthusiast uncovers an ancient venue and restores it to its former glory.
As you walk around the restored ruins of Popwell Chelmsford, you can almost taste the carpet bile and uncut MDMA. Here is the very spot where Steve from Accounts got denied entry because he was wearing tracky bottoms.
Questioning lockdown measures isn't anti-science. A big part of science is asking whether actions have in fact worked. When future generations ask what we did for the pandemic, it will be hard to clarify whether or not it was effective.
So, Grandad Jeff, how did you help in the fight against COVID-19?
Well, son, in restaurants we had tiny arrows on the floor guiding us to the toilet. We went one way, but crucially, we came back another.
What did that achieve?
How dare you? Next thing you'll be telling me I stockpiled all this pasta for nothing.
It's also fair to ask questions of public health bodies without being seen as some sort of evil venture capitalist who wants to replace the beloved NHS with a sinister Darwinian game show, which I have already trademarked. There's a slightly odd view in this country of the NHS and Public Health England as a kindly band of benevolent wizards with no political long game whatsoever. Bear in mind that Public Health England were originally included in corona deaths people who'd had it, recovered, and then died from something else. It's hard to fathom why that ever happened. However, I'd love to take that liberty when I go.
I'm afraid Jeff Norcott is dead. 75 years old. Not a bad innings.
What was the cause of death?
Circumcision.
But he had that when he was five.
Yes, but he never really got over it, not psychologically. And in a complete and unrelated coincidence, he was also run over by an oil tanker. What are the chances?
As well as being someone apparently hell-bent on euthanising the old, I'm also held accountable for having dared to vote Conservative in 2019.
This is what you voted for!
Now, unless my memory escapes me, I don't remember pandemic planning figuring that highly in the televised debates. And given the recent findings of the Equality and Human Rights Commission on anti-Semitism, I'd say in terms of all-round leadership options, we weren't exactly looking at a vintage year. But it's fair to ask, would Labour have done any better? I think they might have handed slightly less contracts to people with names that sound like evil hedge funds. It's possible that Labour would have been less pro-business, but on the other hand, we'd have refused to buy PPE if it came from Israel. Maybe less people would have died this year, but loads more would have died in future years because of the delayed impact of stricter, longer national lockdowns. Now, I've always prided myself on saying what most people think. However, for the first time, I'm clearly not in the majority. Most people are very pro-lockdown.
These measures don't go far enough. In fact, saying these measures don't go far enough doesn't go far enough. Actually, New Zealand haven't gone far enough. If this government had a heart, it would drop food and essential medicines down the chimney, like Christmas. But you get dried pasta and insulin.
One aspect of the lockdown debate that isn't welcome is excessive moral certainty. Whichever way you look at it, you've got to concede that the other side has an argument. So maybe we could learn from the mistakes of Brexit and try and see it from the other point of view. You know, people who oppose lockdown, maybe they're not all psychopathic eugenicists. Conversely, people who favour lockdown aren't all lily-livered bedwetters. The way I see it, lockdown is an act of economic self-harm. Look, I just want to keep my freedom of movement. Hang about, have I become a Remainer?
Jeff Norcott.
Now this week saw a landmark for a horribly effective viral super spreader. Here with more detail is Jess Robinson.
Yes, the inexplicably catchy kids song Baby Shark has now been viewed more than 7 billion times on YouTube. That's pretty much one viewing for every person on the entire planet. Suddenly, it seems so obvious where the government has been going wrong for the last 8 months. If you want a message to stick in people's heads, all you need is 4 notes and an infectious beat.
Wash your hands. Be alert. Stay at home. But go to work. Control the virus. Save some lives. Need an eye test. Take a drive.
Now reach the podcast.
Isle of Wight. Get the app. Thursday night. Let's all clap.
Bravo.
Well done.
Wear a mask. Some PPE.
PPE.
All together. 1, 2, 3.
New slogan time.
And test and trace and test and track and test and trace.
And 6 is the magic number.
And I wanna thank you for giving me the best job of my life.
You're welcome, Dido.
NHS is our rock. Mispronounced. Hatman cop.
Oh, sorry.
Let's eat out. And get drunk. That didn't work.
No.
Who'd have thunk?
Duh.
Second wave. Stay in your house. Unless you like.
La-da-da-da-da.
Shooting grouse.
Boo.
Follow these rules. And maybe you might be let out in 2022.
Jess Robinson.
8 billion views on YouTube. So that brings us to the end of the show.
Well, no, it doesn't, Steve, because some of the jokes came in after the deadline and I'm filing a lawsuit.
Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.
You've been listening to The Now Show, starring Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis, Sophie Duker, Jeff Norcott, Jenna Friedman, Gemma Arrowsmith and Luke Kempner. It was written by the cast with additional material from Gareth Gwynn, Athena Kuglenu, and Bika Mod and Charlie Dinkin. The song was written and arranged by Alex Silverman and Jess Robinson. The producer was Victoria Lloyd, and it was a BBC Studios production.
And the team will be back at the same time next week with their special guests Sarah Keyworth, Darren Harriott and Beardy Man. After the news.